Hi, this is Jim from SageWorks. Before we start the program, I want to make sure everyone understands that we often talk about OSHA and EPA citations, along with some other regulatory actions from other agencies, legal cases, and criminal activity. Everyone is innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. Proposed fines are exactly that, and they are often litigated, reduced, or vacated. We use available public records, news accounts, and press releases. We cannot warranty or guarantee the details of any of the stories we share, since we are not directly involved with these stories, at least not most of the time. Enjoy the show.
This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
And from deep within OSHA, Safety Wars for Wednesday, March 7th. That's what the podcast we're going to be doing now. Tell you what, I'm making it through 10 hours a month. Let me see if I can get a screenshot. Jim, you have a bias. So I'll let you in on one of the secrets of detecting deception and detecting lies out there. You ask a question and you say, how many stairs did you fall down? And if the person says three, that means that you have to go out there and actually count. Was it the number three? Was it actually three things out there that the person fell down? Was it three stairs? Because a lot of times when things get made up, we say three because we have a bias towards the number three. Well, what else out there? You have three blind mice. Hear no evil, see no evil, speak no evil. Three branches of government. Executive, judiciary, legislative. You have Father, Son, Holy Spirit. You have all the number three. So when someone says three, you know, is it really three? That's an indicator that you probably should go out there and count. We also have a lot of stuff out there. You have the Lord of the Rings trilogy, right? You have Star Wars movies that came out in threes, right? And, right, you got, let me fix my shirt here. Yes, okay, we're good. Didn't look good on the camera here. You know, I do all the makeup and all the wardrobe, as you can see. But, you know, so he's coming out with another two books. I'm not really at liberty to discuss the release schedule here. Even if I knew it, for sure, I wouldn't share it here. That's up to, you know, that's Jay's deal. But basically, part of, and we're having this conversation here with the Jens Rasmussen, the three modes work, the No, on the project I'm involved with right now, where you have this skills mode, and we know we try to get things into the skills mode. We have the rules mode, and then we have the knowledge or the lack of knowledge mode, depending on how you want to look at it. And what happens is, how do you get to that skills mode? It's always a debate. How do we get to that? Where we have a high familiarity with the job, low attention span. We get there in part. There's a lot of ways you can get there. But you get there in part by being organized. Well, what do you mean, Jim? Being organized. Being organized, real simple. So it's all in the job setup, right? How you set up your job, how you set up your work area, how you set up a system. And is the system, how's the system set up? And Jay talks a lot about this in the book so far. I read about half of it here, hoping to finish the other half the next day or so. And hopefully get Jay on the program here, if we can make that happen. But the whole thing is trying to get organized. So that's what the advantage is of this book so far. As I see. So, you know, Jay, as you know, he is the head of Safety FM, the Safety Focus Network, Safety Focus Moment, which is the network we're on here, Safety FM. And, right, and he has, if I had to count, I'd say probably around 1,500 podcasts and programs on the network so far. Maybe more. It might be closer to 2,000. And if you count all the personal appearances and everything, we're talking well in excess of 2,000. And the advantage of this book, and it's probably going along with the other two books as well, I haven't received them yet, is you are organizing all of this stuff, organized down into easy-to-digest, short chapters so far, right? And you're able to get in there. Remember, short. It's better, concise, and it's organized. What could be better, right? So one of the things, I'm found out, and as you know, I'm all over the place usually, is that when academically even, once I learn to organize my thoughts, once I learn to organize my career, organize paperwork, organize training programs, more on that in the next few months, organizing things. When you start to do that now, right, now you're able to accomplish things. And that's what the advantage of the book. I'm enjoying it. If you listen to the podcast, you're a long-term listener of Jay's programs, it's what he talks about. He talks about some personal things, and then it's his story to tell. On family tragedies, on a workplace fatality he had to manage over the years. Talks about burnout. I know in the safety world, I know I've been burned out multiple times in the last 33 years. Been burned out a lot of times, hell, years of being burned out between the career and everything else that's going on. And, great program and a great book. We're going to go to commercial break here, and I'm going to start with the news right off the bat here. And let's see. Okay. What do we want to do? What do we want to do? Okay, we're going to be talking about Newark Airport in part, so why not play that song again on Newark Airport?
Controllers fried, took traumas.
That was Safety Warrior. With Wheels Up, Not to My Night, My Friend. So here we have, more drama out here in Newark, right? And if there's a major news story, yes, there will be a song with it. Frightening black out of radar. Radio at Newark Airport leads FAA to make urgent changes. A week after air traffic controllers lost all radar and radio communications for the aircraft flying in and out of Newark Liberty International Airport, federal officials announced steps to fix the problems that led to the scary moments both on the ground and in the air. Amid growing concerns about safety, the FAA on Wednesday said it will also increase controller staffing, which has been widely blamed for canceled flights and long delays for thousands of passengers flying into and out of Newark. The FAA's actions will include backing up the data lines, connecting the New York-based radar processing facility with the control center in Philadelphia, where those who handle the airspace of Newark Liberty are based. I did not know that. So, now, there is a flight tower there in Newark. I mean, I've seen it hundreds of times, but apparently the control center is in Philadelphia, right? Which I thought, you know, it should not have surprised me because, right, we have Linden Airport, which is right down the road from Newark Airport. That's like a private airport in Linden, New Jersey, right around the Bayway Refinery. If you've ever seen the news helicopters take off, broadcasting, they still have them? I don't know. But all of them in New York, I don't know. I haven't been there. I want to watch TV out of New York in the morning. But the morning drive time helicopters always used to take off out of Linden Airport. I used to watch them all the time. But anyway, there, you know, I know with them, they don't have a control tower, the last I checked. So they're... long story short, and of course, people have to send me stuff while I am on the air. Okay, yes, okay. So, anyway, they moved it out of there now that it's in Philadelphia. I mean, it seems to me like they're adding more and more and more. I mean, let's say there was a loss in communication. Oh, that'll never happen. Well, guess what had happened here. With this, ultimately establishing a STARS hub at Philadelphia so the facility does not depend on telecommunications feed from New York. And all different upgrades. Hopefully they're the right upgrades that they're doing out of there, because I tell you what, I fly out of there all the time and I don't want to be dealing with that stuff. So White House announced this week that it is the here I got the press release. I don't have the press release, but anyway, we're going to do a share screen here with its hurricane preparedness week. As we all know, if you've been a longtime listener, even before Safety Wars, every September we talk about disaster preparedness, specifically hurricane, right? Hurricanes, earthquakes, things of that nature. But right around this time of year, we have the Eastern Pacific hurricane season is starting on a week from today. It's Wednesday, May 7th. So May 15th to November 30th is the Eastern Pacific hurricane season. And then the Atlantic season starts in June, and Central Pacific hurricane season starts in June 1st, both of them June 1st. So with all of the problems you've had with hurricanes, especially in the latter half of the season, the last couple of years, it's important that you go out there and you prepare for hurricanes. What do you do? So hurricanes are not just a coastal problem. Yeah, I know. Nowhere near the coast, places are getting whacked, like in North and South Carolina and Georgia, right up through the border there, right up through right the Florida Panhandle and scraping the border of western Georgia, then into western North Carolina and South Carolina, that area, right? A lot of stuff. I mean, there's the president did a personal visit there a couple months back, and they were still, a lot of people still did not have the help that they needed, or at least perhaps they did not take advantage of the help that was needed. I imagine most of the former and very little of the latter, right, there. So make sure, start a plan. Get down into that Jens Rasmussen skills mode with preparation and start a plan. Include what do you do at the office, the kids' daycare, and anywhere else you frequent. In your hurricane plans, ensure business has a continuity plan to continue operating when disaster strikes. You may have to evacuate quickly due to a hurricane if you live in an evacuation zone. Learn your evacuation routes. Practice with your household and pets and identify where you will stay. So what are some of the warning signs, right? They have a FEMA app for your mobile phone and your mobile device, and where you get real-time alerts. In lieu of that, rather than that, they still have the emergency radios out there, for the time being at least. So identify if you may need additional help during an emergency if you or anyone else in your household has an individual with a disability. Right, make sure your insurance policies and personal documents are up to date and strengthen your home. Declutter drains and gutters and bring in outside furniture, or at least make sure it's secure outside with that. You always see videos of tornadoes, trampolines. I got one in the backyard. And lawn furniture and everything becoming airborne and then causing bigger problems than what they started with. Stay safe during a hurricane, meaning stay informed. Deal with the weather. Take refuge in a designated storm shelter or an interior room for high winds, preferably away from windows. Go to the highest level of the building if you're trapped in the building. This is all off of ready.gov. Do not climb into a closed attic. You may become trapped by rising flood water. Do not walk, swim, or drive through flood waters. I mean, how many people do I know who ruined their car? And again, you're dealing with a lot of stuff afterwards. So a lot of stuff you could do out there. Now, if you're a disaster response worker, right, and you're going to be cleaning this stuff up, it's very important that you have the right training and the right equipment and everything else. And we also do disaster response worker training here at Safety Wars. So give us a call. We'll do disaster response training if we can schedule it with you and or your organization. Very important skill to have out there. So... no, it's soda, not beer. Right? If you're watching on the video end, I get these comments. Are you drinking beer, Jim? Are you drinking beer? No, I'm not drinking beer. All right? I'm doing my thing out here. Now there was... Let me see if I could get this up here. I was just looking at this prior to airtime. Here. And it is important. We know that. I got permission to share this off of LinkedIn with the original author. So the author here, and let's see. No. Yeah, I hang out on LinkedIn and... We want to, there's something relevant. I contact the author. Sometimes they say, sure, share it on the air. Sometimes they're like, no, I'd prefer you not. So the author is Jason Kunz, K-U-N-Z. He has a website out there. What is his website? Kunzcompany.com, KUNZcompany.com. Now, the biggest complaint that, and if there's going to be OSHA reform out there, if there's going to be, is one of the things they should be changing is the TRIR. There should be additional statistics out there. Because Mr. Kuntz says, it has... Now, is the TRIR insightful or the greatest illusion in safety? Right? For decades, the TRIR has been used as a benchmark for safety performance, but credible research now shows it's statistically invalid for assessing true organizational safety. Yeah. No guvno on that. All right? As I've been saying this a lot. What's the TRIR? It's a calculation that you have to make every January on the previous year on the total recordable incident rate, right? And you do a calculation and you come up with a number. Hold on. And so, this is what, and it treats all these injuries the same, basically. So let's say that you have a SIF, right? What's an SIF? It is severe injury, serious injury, or fatality, right? So on the TRIR, it counts more or less like serious injuries along with a laceration, with a simple injury. It's all the same. Now, my opinion is that you should divide these things up where you have severe injuries. And it says on the OSHA 300 log, right, and the summary form, it has all this stuff broken out, right? But this is what happens. A lot of companies, especially third-party providers, they just look at the TRIR, and it doesn't really tell the whole story. I'd much rather have a laceration than a fatality. Why are we counting them the same? And this is what happens when you get into the safety bullying and the safety struggle sessions I talk about here. I mean, I was talking to a very experienced guy a couple weeks ago where he was saying that the safety officer came out screaming and yelling about something out of the office, blah, 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 and, overreactions and... Often what happens is the TRIR is used as a bully club. Well, we had an injury. Well, and it's our TRIR is destroyed. And we're going to count it as a recordable. And then you go and you do the investigation. Turns out that it's a minor scratch needing a couple of stitches. But then when you look at the context of this, right, and that's basically what I'm saying, this doesn't... The TRIR doesn't give you the context. Well, the person was wearing cut-resistant gloves, and thank God the person was wearing cut-resistant gloves because rather than one stitch or something like that, he probably would have had an amputation or had a lot more stitches. So he had controls in place that prevented this from being a more serious injury. And guess what? Now we were being safe. It doesn't mean you're not a safe company. It doesn't mean you're not a safe outfit because you had something in place. Even if you have an injury, that doesn't necessarily mean you're an unsafe company, right? The TRIR, going back to Jason Kuntz here, reflects random variation more than systemic improvement. Most year-to-year changes are statistical noise. What does that mean? Unless you're going to see something majorly change that number. So I've had clients go down from a 5 to a 0.5, for example, on TRIR. Unless it's something like that, you're going to see, statistical noise. So 1 year it's 1 year it's 2, 1 year it's 0.5, 1 year it's this. And there's still a lot of variation here. That doesn't really mean anything. It creates creates risky incentives like underreporting. We talk about here all the time. If it's going to be measured, it's going to be manipulated. So things get manipulated back and forth and back and forth, right? Additionally, minor differences in TRI scores 1.5 versus 1.2. two, for example, are statistically meaningless, and comparing TRIR across companies or business units leads to false conclusions. In short, TRIR is easy to measure, but misleading to interpret. It fails to predict serious outcomes and should not guide strategic decision-making. Leadership must move beyond chasing TRIR numbers and focus instead on understanding and controlling sources of SIF risk. Serious injuries and fatality risk. How? That's a great question and a complex one. It starts with shifting the questions we ask. And that is Jay Allen's book, Ask Better Questions. And I think there is a book out there, Ask Better Questions. But that's what you want to do, ask better questions. And there are different levels of SIFs. So, for example, here, right, blah, blah, blah. Do we have, and he says, and I have to get this down, do we have, blah, 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 serious injury and fatality potential being reduced, right? What are the hazards in our system, right? And again, truth, accuracy, and everything else. So if you're in charge of interpreting these numbers, go a little bit deeper in this. That's all I have to say. And I'm going to go and I got to take a break real quick here. I got to answer that request. So we're going to go back to the music and we'll go with that. So
come and listen to a story about a man named Jim. Safety's his game and the odds were looking grim. Workplace hazards everywhere, from ladders to machines. He took on the mission to make those places clean.
Safety, that is. PPE. OSHA rules.
Well, next thing you know, old Jim's in high demand. Teaching folks safety from the mines to the land. Said we gotta keep them safe, make sure they know the score about hazards and the dangers that they just can't ignore.
Training, that is.
Inspections.
Safety plans.
So now they call him up. Safety Wars is here to stay. Fighting the good fight, keeping dangers at bay. Tune in and learn with Jim. He's got the safety know-how. Cause Safety Wars is on and we're starting right now.
Safety Wars, that is. Set a spell. Take your time. Stay safe now, you hear?
So now they call him up. Safety Wars is here to stay. Fighting the good fight, keeping dangers at bay. Tune in and learn with Jim. He's got the safety know-how. Cause Safety Wars is on and we're starting right now.
Safety Wars, that is. Set a spell, take your time. Stay safe now, you're here.
Well, next thing you know, old Jim's in high demand. Teaching folks safety from the mines to the land. Said we gotta keep them safe, make sure they know the score about hazards and the dangers that they just can't ignore.
Just can't ignore.
Training, that is. Inspections, safety plans. So now they call him up. Safety Wars is here to stay. Fighting the good fight, keeping dangers at bay. Tune in and learn with Jim, he's got the safety.
All right, we are back. Sorry about that. I'm working remotely here, so you know how it is. But basically, the whole thing is, you know, Now, along the lines with all these numbers, you got to know what you're looking at. And I see that seriously lacking here on what and that's Jason Kuntz there. We have there. All right, I see that a serious thing there where people don't look at these numbers and they don't take them seriously. They don't take them for what they are. Right. And you know, you get the manipulation, and then you get, and then what happens is certain oil companies, especially, they're famous for that, where managers' bonuses are related to the TRIR. And then what happens? You get people screaming. They start yelling. They start manipulating the numbers, all to the detriment of the system and the workers. And then they wonder why their safety professionals burn out. Because things are usually dumped on us here, and that burn us out constantly. What else do we have? Let's go on over to the regular news. Try to be better prepared for these interruptions here. It's just very frustrating here with that. So here we have one, right? The Department of Health and Human Services. HHS revoked some layoff notices. So, and the last week or so, a lot of people were laid off over at the National Institute of Health and NIOSH and everything, specifically over basically DOGE cuts, right? So here we have a story from last Friday that was updated yesterday. Right, Workers' Safety Agency NIOSH lays off most of the remaining staff. Nearly all of the remaining staff at NIOSH were laid off Friday. Multiple officials and laid-off employees told CBS News, cutting programs ranging from approvals of new safety equipment to firefighter health. Much of the work at NIOSH, an arm of the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, had already stalled after an initial round of layoffs on April 1st that the agency ordered by HHS Secretary Robert F. Kennedy. Now, what I pointed out also was, the question is, for me, is this all backlash because of the way that COVID-19 was managed by the CDC and all the shenanigans there? And, people at the CDC getting pardons by Joe Biden here because of what could potentially be criminal activity by that organization. No requests for investigations of firefighter injuries. This is from CBS News. A workplace health hazard had already stopped being accepted. So not requesting any investigation of firefighter injuries. A CDC plan to help Texas schools curb the spread of measles infections was also scrapped due to layoffs. And, what does NIOSH do? It issues voluntary recommendation for employers, and NIOSH produces research to inform OSHA regulations and enforcement. NIOSH employees receiving layoff notices on Friday, including some workers from the World Trade Center program. Here we have an org chart for NIOSH, right? And this is officially what the... No, I looked this up right at the beginning of the show. So this was the org chart, right? Well, one of the laid-off workers did a updated org chart, and it looks like this, according to them. Also a story from CBS News, and... I got to stop sharing that. So basically, according to the updated org chart, I don't know if it's satire or not. I haven't investigated it. But basically, the Division of Compensation Analysis Support and World Trade Center Health Program are like the only ones still there. After this. Anyway, there's more to the story, as always, with that. So here we have also some information from Cal OSHA. Cal OSHA issues clarification on lead safety rules for abrasive blasting in construction. That's what we used to call sandblasting, and this is from today, from OHSonline.com. Cal OSHA has issued updated guidance for clarifying how construction employers must protect workers performing dry abrasive blasting under California's recently amended lead standard. Now, my question is this. If you are doing lead-based paint removal with sandblasting, why are you doing a dry method? Why aren't you doing wet blasting with that? That doesn't seem... I mean, I worked for an industrial painting outfit for many years. When it ever was lead, it was always done with a wet blast, and then later on we use a robot to blast a lot of this stuff. So you don't even, you know, if you can use a robot, guess what? The robots are getting more and more sophisticated. That's where you need to go with that. And what's amazing is that they have a temporary limit, and that's going to change in 2030 to more stringent a limit. So currently the permissible exposure level for lead during abrasive blasting is 25 micrograms per cubic meter of air, which will be reduced to 10 micrograms per cubic meter starting in January 1st, 2030. Now, if you're dry abrasive blasting, there's the other thing. Under the industrial ventilation standard, that has to be done under supplied air, usually a blast hood with that, with a cape and everything else put in onto it. So you're already at a protection factor of very high, like 1,000, if memory serves me right, on that. So I don't know how I know. So again, hierarchy controls use wet abrasive blasting rather than dry, right? So, and in my experience, once you use wet abrasive blasting, the levels are way around what the 2030 levels under Cal OSHA are going to be, under 10 micrograms per meter cubed. So exactly what are they doing here? I have to ask that question, right? So you're not going to be dry abrasive glass and lead anyway, lead-based coatings anyway. I don't get it with that. Now, the other question is, well, Jim, why, if you're with steel structures, which is what you would use abrasive blasting on, why don't they use a chemical peel? And the thing is that usually site conditions preclude that from being effective in removing paint, in my experience, number one. And number two, is that you probably need to be in supplied air anyway with the chemicals you use in a paint stripper, a lot of these chemicals. Right, so remember, steel is cold. You're not gonna, the surface prep doesn't allow for that with a cold surface or the chemical peel. Often, I'm told. I don't know. It's smoke and mirrors is what I'm coming down. I think that's a valid question. Is this smoke and mirrors by Cal OSHA here, where they didn't really need to make a stand, make a standard here? Now, some other news here. We're just going to run through here in no particular order. So, black smoke signals first day of Vatican conclave has failed to elect the new pope. Plumes of black smoke have emerged from the chimney on the top of the Sistine Chapel, signaling that the 133 cardinals sealed off inside have failed to elect the new pope on the first day of the conclave. After the formal procession to the Sistine Chapel, with each of the cardinals swearing the oath to secrecy, the first voting round only got underway at about 5:45 p.m. local time. Then all the eyes were on the famous chimney, which was diligently guarded by a seagull for some time of the time the cardinals were voting. After the tense wait, black smoke finally appeared at 9:05 p.m. Vatican time to loud applause from the crowd. The conclave will continue on Thursday, and only when its successor, to Pope Francis, who died last month, age 88, is found. Now, not that I was involved in, like, a conclave, but I remember I remember I was the member of, at the time, my church council, and there was no clear, we had to elect a new president of the council, and there was no clear leader in the church, right? And now, unlike my one friend, right, where his church, and this is a Lutheran church, ELCA, not Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, there's like 3,000 members in the church. So when you run for office for the church council, guess what? You actually have to run for office. Now, it's not like all the other smaller congregations where they're begging for people. And in the smaller congregations, they often have a similar ballot that they're going through in Rome. So basically, this is how it works. Everybody's name is out there, right? It's an ecclesiastical ballot. I believe that's what they call it. Everyone's name is valid, right, in the group you're dealing with. And then you all got a piece of paper, and you write the name of the person that you want to be church president, right? We all hand them out, and then you see what people are saying. It's all anonymous. You got a counter there, or you invite a counting person there to count the votes, and you have, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, you have all these people there, right? Well, it's going to be this person that gets votes, this person gets votes, that person gets votes. Then you have a second round of voting, and that's limited to, the way we worked it at least, it was limited to the people who got voted the first time. So you had, like, out of 10 people, you had 3 people that got votes. Now the vote is only limited on the second round to those 3 people, and then, right, and then if you need to go again, you need to go again. And that's how that we worked it with that. My understanding is a very similar situation here with this, and there's a lot of horse trading going on. Now, one of our very best friends of our program here, Safety Wars, was the, and I won't mention the name of the cardinal. He was the secretary for a cardinal, and he says, yeah, and you know, he had some questions on the election of John Paul II to Pope, and the cardinal said, look, you know, I'm not allowed to talk about it. He said, well, yeah, I know you're not allowed to talk about it, but do you have any insight? He said, no, I'm not allowed to talk about it. Why? They want unity with that, and that's why they're sworn to secrecy. It's not that he was prying. He just wanted to had some questions. Now, he was reading a book, and the book wasn't really specific on the things. So here we have out of Milwaukee here. All right. And I'll do a share screen when we get to the real report. All right. So OSHA, you was up until this administration regularly issuing the stuff on the website in press release form. They haven't been doing that. I've complained. Nothing's, I've complained. Much easier to get information out to people when you have information. OSHA fines Milwaukee contractor $85,000 for scaffolding incident at the courthouse. This is from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. So we'll get into the things. The company was fined $85,000 by OSHA, and that is, we'll see whether that's a final or not. When workers on our scaffolding were put into jeopardy, and they have a picture of a collapsed scaffolding here, it looks like. On October 10th, 2 workers needed to be rescued by the Milwaukee Fire Department. When scaffolding, they were on tipped significantly into one side when they were doing work near the top of the courthouse. And it looks to me as, well, if not looks, this is a suspended scaffolding. So according to OSHA, vertical lines are not fastened to a fixed safe point of anchorage. The scaffolding system was not properly set up by a competent person qualified in scaffold direction. Remember, there's 58 different types of scaffolding, I'm told. You just because you're a competent person in one does not mean you're a competent person in all of them. The tiebacks in the suspended scaffolding system were not equivalent in strength to the suspension ropes. exposing employees to a scaffold collapse and fall. Tiebacks are not securely not secured. Friggin' AI wrote this. To a structurally sound anchorage on the building, suspension scaffold outrigger beams are not restrained, and employer exposed workers in dangers of scaffolding collapse due to the failure of some components. The trolleys that were connected to the I-beams in the scaffold platform were not designed to be used as personal lifting devices. And the case is still open. Okay, so here we have, and I'll let me do a share screen here. Boom, boom, boom. All right, so there we have 85,000. That is the current penalty. Does not look, is that the final penalty? No, that's all the initial. You're sent, this gets negotiated downward and vacated. So violation number one was the general duty clause violation here where employees are exposed to crushing, struck by, and fall hazards while performing work from an elevated two-point suspension scaffold swing stage equipped with blah, 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 trolleys. The trolleys that were connected to the I-beams and the scaffold platform are not designed to be used as personal lifting devices. That's bad. We have a general requirements under the scaffolding standard. Suspension scaffold outrigger beams are not restrained to prevent movement. That was 10,641. First one is 14,895. We have the next one, which is a general requirements. Tiebacks are not secured to a structurally sound anchorage on the building structure. Tiebacks are secured to a single steel cable that was wrapped around a parapet wall on the north side of the building. The parapet wall was not evaluated to determine if it would support the load of the suspended scaffolding. So all of this has to be certified by somebody, a qualified individual. Can a competent person be a qualified individual? Certainly. But not necessarily the other way around, right? So, again, you got to know what you're doing here. Vertical lifelines, support lines, and suspension ropes cannot be attached to each other, nor shall they be attached, right? The employer had not verified that each individual vertical lifeline were independent of one another or attached to the same anchorage point, in that the lifelines were secured to a single steel cable, right? Yeah, this is good. All right. The employer had not verified the vertical lifelines were independent of the scaffold system, in that the steel cable that held the lifelines and the steel cable that held the tiebacks are connected with a 3/4-inch D-ring shackle. Ay caramba. Tiebacks, and this was 14,895. Tiebacks are not equivalent in strength to the suspension ropes. The steel cable line, the steel cable was wrapped around a parapet wall on the north side of the building and was rated for 30,000 pounds. The steel cable line is connected with a quasi 3/4-inch D-ring shackle, which derated the line to 14,000 pounds, exposing employees to a scaffold collapse and fall. So basically, you're not stronger than your weakest link, in this case, a shackle. Scaffolds are not erected, moved, or dismantled or altered by trained, pardon me, and experienced employees. Right? Again, qualified, trained, have the authority to fix things. Again, employees not trained. That was 0.05C. Another training violation they got per person. And for the last one, Vertical lifelines are not fastened to a fixed safe point of anchorage. Right? With that. Again. Now, all... it's even with the fall protection week. I talk to people, right? And they talk to me after our talk, right? I do a lot of talks during fall protection week, which is this week. And I hear, wow, I didn't know that. Wow. I forgot about that. Wow. Where are you getting this information, Jim? And it's like, no, it's in the instruction manual. And it's not hard, at least not for me, at least. It's not hard to look this information up and convey it. It's out there for free. Why employers don't make avail themselves is a lot of times the employers do not know this information. They don't know what they're looking at. So what happens is you have accidents, you have injuries, you have all these other situations. This easily could have been a fatality, a double fatality. The other thing that I'm surprised that they did not have them cited for was, what about a rescue plan? How are you going to get those people out of there? Right? It's very frustrating, right? Very frustrating indeed. All right, what else we got? We got 6 minutes to go here, folks. We got plenty of stories. So we already talked about the FAA. Big thing. Now, I don't know if this is people, ringing the bell, freaking out. Nuclear war, this is from the U.S. Sun. Nuclear war could break out at any time, warns Pakistani defense boss after India airstrikes as nations sit on the brink. Now, one of these articles here, they were comparing the armies and the military of India and Pakistan. One thing that they are almost equal on is the number of nuclear weapons that they have, where India just nudges out Pakistan. But Pakistan and everything but artillery, howitzers sort of things, right? Tovahin, I don't know what the proper name is now, but they used to be called howitzers, is outnumbered by India. So when you're outnumbered by your neighbor and your neighbor starts an invasion, nuclear weapons are on the table with this, is my understanding here. Now, how this is going to escalate and how it's going to impact the rest of the world, I have no idea. Obviously, I don't know if we have treaties with India or Pakistan. I know we deal with both countries in the United States. India, the president of India or prime minister, I'm not sure what the proper name is for that, was in the country a couple months ago, and he wanted to do like not a MAGA, but a MEGA, Make India Great Again here. And they got along great with President Trump, but in Pakistan, we have relations with Pakistan. We, fought Afghanistan and we were dealing with Pakistan. Now, according to Pakistan, hey, Pakistani citizens getting killed in the latest round. But India says, no, we're not targeting civilians, we're targeting terrorists. So we have to see how this plays out here with this. Tit for tat sort of thing. Pakistan vows retaliation after Indian airstrikes. Again, I have great affection for the Indian people and the Pakistani people. There after how they treated my mother and grandmother during World War II there. So great respect. And as everyone knows, Woodbridge, New Jersey, where I grew up, is a Indian community. Now, Islin, which is part of Woodbridge Township, is an Indian community. Great ties, friends, They're dealing with people in business, great people there. Same thing with the Pakistani people. I've had great relations with them all through the years, not as frequent as Indian. I mean, people are people. It's the bell curve, right? Some people are really good. Some people are really bad. Most people are somewhere in the middle, right, with that. World's first from interestingengineering.com. World's first nuclear resistance spy robot debuts for protecting U.S. missile silos. Developed in direct response to classified vulnerability assessments concerning potential unauthorized entry into nuclear storage infrastructure, the Rebecca 360 system represents a hardened, non-emitting surveillance solution engineered for denied or degraded environments. Right? Here. According to Bounce Imaging, this system is the only tactical camera approved for Nuclear Asset Protection Act, right? Activities. And basically, okay, they have a new security system here with this. Cameras and everything else. I don't know. I don't get it. I shouldn't have even picked that story. I'll be honest with you. Amazon unveils high-tech robots that can replace huge numbers of warehouse workers. I have seen some of these in Amazon warehouses. Some of this technology is pretty incredible. Online giant Amazon has unveiled new high-tech robots with the potential to replace huge numbers of warehouse workers. The machines, called Vulcan, have cutting-edge technology that can learn to feel and have a human-like sense of touch. By doing so, they can carry out detailed picking and packing in warehouses that until now can only be done by people. It paves the way for the robots to take over jobs currently done by workers in Amazon's vast warehouses, known as fulfillment centers in the UK and around the world. Amazon, founded by billionaire Jeff Bezos, employs around 75,000 people in the UK alone. It's from the UK news source, most of them in warehouses. So, again, more and more automated. That's what I see going. We saw that when I worked my way through college at a warehouse, Twin County Grocers, with my brother Wally. So I know a little bit about warehouses, and I also had a hand in building dozens of Amazon warehouses. So that's what I got tonight with this stuff. So I wanted to thank everybody for listening, and we'll come back to you tomorrow. Well, it's going to be a pre-recorded program tomorrow because my son is being the bat boy for the New York Boulders tomorrow night. And I'm going to be watching the game to watch my son. Right? On that. I'd love to be there with him. I'm very proud of him. He loves being, you know, he took last year off from being bat boy, but it's a job he's done before. A lot of fun. So for Safety Wars, this is Jim Polzel, and we'll see you tomorrow. There you go.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the host and its guest and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the company. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are only examples. They should not be utilized in the real world as the only solution available, as they are based only on very limited and dated open source information. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the company. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, recording, or otherwise, without prior written permission of the creator of the podcast, Jay Allen.